Hey, welcome back. Camden, New Jersey makes Let's Talk Politics. Is this the worst Congress ever? Voter fraud is back in the news, and it's time for the RNC convention. All with us today, joining us, political analyst Mr. Andre Harper. You're listening to Let's Talk Politics. I am your host, Clark Garrison.
Going to stay home in Louisiana and man the front
very admirable. I actually have a little bit more respect for him than I did yesterday. So anyway, 2,286 delegates will be showing up in 2,125 alternate delegates, dropping all in Tampa to support their candidate, Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. Yep, hell of a ticket. Or should it be Paul Ryan and Mitt Romney? Never know. Anyway, I hope to have political analyst Mr. Andre Harper on the show today, and we can have a little talk about what's going on in the RNC and how's the Republican race shaping up. Vote fraud is back. And I think this is what it is. Just every week we're going to be talking about voter fraud one way, shape, or another. Well, it's back. This time in the lovely state, the fair weather state of South Carolina. Shocker, huh? Well, as it stands, there's a federal trial where South Carolina's voter identification law got under Monday, with the state senator insisting his work on the law was aimed at fighting fraud and instilling public confidence in the election system. Now, I really did not know that there was this tremendous national affront to our electoral system, but thank God, South Carolina Congress is setting the record straight. And I don't know about you guys, but I feel a hell of a lot safer that folks are not going to break into the South Carolina election booth and just start voting all over the place. I feel safe. I don't know about you. Not so much about crime, that's going up. Not so much about poverty, that's certainly going up. And jobless rate is going up. But joy, damn it, there will not, and I repeat, not be any voter fraud on our watch. That's out. Albeit less than 10% of Americans actually take the time to vote. Damn it, the 10% that do, we're going to watch them. And we're going to watch them with a close eye, because I know I have a lot of friends that right now are planning and plotting to go vote several times. Even though, shit, it's hard to get them to vote one. But I know they're plotting right now to get 10 in or impersonate somebody else so they can click that damn ballot. You know, here's a novel idea. Why don't we, instead of fooling around with this foolishness, why don't we start kicking the other 90% Americans in the ass that should be voting, that have the credentials, and are just saying, no, I'm not voting, fuck it, I'm not doing it. Yeah, I could. I got my credentials right here. I'm of age. I'm of sound mind. But I'm just not, I'm too tired. I mean, it's not that serious. Vote doesn't matter. Why don't we focus on the huge disparity of people that just won't vote and make up some system? If you don't vote, you go to jail. I don't know. I'm just throwing stuff out there. Seems like a better plot than messing around with the very few people that even want to vote in the first place, right? I don't know. It could be me. Anyway, what else is in the news? Oh, there's so much. There's so much. South Carolina. I love me some South Carolina. Oh, let me finish this. What does it say? So, yeah, this congressman is fighting a good fight. During the morning testimony, Senator George Chip Campson III cited examples of fraud that he took into consideration while drafting early versions of this South Carolina's law. These included vote buying. Yeah, there's a lot that's going on in my neighborhood. People are, you know, selling dollars and cents to get that vote over. Voter roll indicating a woman who showed up at the polls who had already voted. And again, this is mad rampant where people are just going back to the polls, missing days off of work to get their butts out there and keep voting. It's hilarious. What else? And under questioning from Justice Department, a Republican justice member said the examples he gave did not involve the type of fraud that requires photo identification in which it would address. This is my big argument. This stuff they're talking about is not based on whether you have the proper ID or not. This is based on a clown that says, I'm going to come back. Well, if he has the proper ID, then we've got to come up with another system that stops that, and it's not about whether you have this fancy ID, this all a truce ID. All Americans, damn it, should have ID. This is Germany, damn it. Where are your papers? That is just hilarious. Again, we should focus on the 90% of Americans who sit on the ass and don't vote because they're lazy and trifling and don't think worth their while. We've got a few Americans that actually vote on this huge political landscape each and every 4 years. A small percentage of Americans. Why don't we focus on the 90% that refuse to get involved and participate in this thing we call an election? I think that, you know, again, let's put them in jail. If you don't vote, you get put in jail. There you go. I'm putting it out there first. Who knows? Another 50 years, that might be the law. Hey, Camden, New Jersey. I told you they're in the news. Man, you guys been through Camden, New Jersey? It's interesting. You think you're in the neighborhood. Anyway, according to the Grio, the Camden Police Department is reported to be disbanding their entire police department. Wow. Some 270 officers will be jobless. Mayor Dana L. Reed will leave some of the officers on staff, but they will not be participating in that thing we call a union. Dude, listen. Unions are dead. Whether I care or think it's fair or not fair is irrelevant. Unions are a dying breed. It is a system that was great the early part of the century, or last century, I guess. But they are finding their way on the doorstep. Teachers union is next. I'm telling you, it's coming. It's coming. Anyway. The crime rate in Camden is thought to be so high that the police force doesn't respond to minor incidents like, oh, say, grand theft auto and vandalism. Guys, more on this as it unfolds. I promise we'll keep an eye on this. This is too hilarious to stop. Anyway, hey guys, we're going to take a quick commercial, and I hope we're going to have political analyst Mr. Andre Harper here, a good friend of mine and fellow colleague of college. And we're going to have fun. How about that? We come back. This is Let's Talk Politics. My name is Clark Garrison. We'll be right back after these commercials.
Has the value of your home decreased, making it impossible to sell your home? Are your monthly payments starting to pull you under? At Taylor One, we work with homeowners nationwide on short selling their homes by negotiating directly with your bank to take less than what's owed for a meaningful resolution. With over 20 years in the business and a customer service priority, Taylor One has helped thousands, and now we want to help you. Call for a free consultation at 888-882-6463. Or visit our website at www.taylor1llc.com. Do you have tax issues, owe back taxes, or need tax relief? Contact L&B Tax Service today. L&B offers you over 15 years of expertise and first-class tax service for individuals, professionals, and business owners. With nationwide service, you can easily find a location near you. Contact one of our tax professionals through our website, lbtaxservice.com. That's www.lbtaxservice.com. L&B Tax Service Incorporated. Tax professionals that you can trust.
Hey, guys, we're back to Talk Politics. My name is Clark Garrison. Thank you for tuning in. We've got a great show and a great lineup for you. Hey, shout out to everyone in the chat room, Mr. BMF Willie Green. Big shout out to you. Thanks for dropping by. Hey, I always like to give feel-good moments, and this is one that I found out there on ABC News website. The world's oldest person, Miss Bessie Cooper, turns 116 years young today. 116? Hey, okay, let me do the math. Let's see. I'm 45. If I lived another 45, if I started from zero and lived another 45, I'll only be 90 and still would have another almost 30 years left. That is crazy. Can you imagine? That's like vampire age, isn't it? 116. Shouts out to her. Wow. And she's out of Georgia. So I guess what happens in Georgia, right? You drink the water, you stay good. And here's what I love. When asked, how have you been able to achieve this 116 years old, the world's oldest woman? She says, I mind my own business and I don't eat junk food. There you have it. That's it. I'm going with that. I don't know about you. I'm going to stay in my lane, and McDonald's is out. Apparently, you're going to make it to 116 if you eat Burger King and McDonald's. I'm just saying. I didn't say it. Bessie said it. Man, McDonald's won't have her on the commercial, I guarantee. Hey, guys, listen, let's move forward. I know we got it. We're for time. We got okay. I know. Thank you, staff. Anyway. Here today to share some insight. So we have the RNC convention going on right now in Tampa, albeit a little precarious with Isaac running rampant. But here today to share some insight. We love when we have our Republicans on the show. Wow, we can ask him all the questions. I'm excited. It's political analyst and author. Welcome to the show, Mr. Andre Harper. What's going on, sir?
What's up, my fellow rattler?
That's right, man. I was telling everybody today, they was like, man, you got another rattler on? I was like, look, man, achievement. That's what we do.
And that is what we do. I left Tallahassee. I left the hill thinking that I could conquer the world, man. And that's just how they breed us in at FAMU.
That's right. And nobody is the wiser because we will do it. You let us skip the rope. We'll tie you up.
Yeah, I had, you know, when I first graduated and started my first job, and, you know, a friend of mine, he really commented on my confidence, and he was like, you know, I know a lot of people that have graduated from FAMU, and it's like you all have chips on your shoulder. And I said, you know, that's called rattler pride.
That's right. That's right. Well, man, look, you've done some amazing things since you've left the and I'm excited. And those who listen to the show know I, too, have voted. Well, you're Republican all out. I've actually voted Republican on two elections, major elections, and especially local. I think local, you know, like I said, all politics is really done at local level. I throw all of that out and just really listen to what these jokers are saying, because if you don't, you're screwing yourself. But anyway, I'm glad we got you on, because we don't get a lot of Republicans down this line, and I'm excited. How excited are you that the convention is going on right now, sir?
Oh, I'm very excited, man. This is an exciting time of the year, you know, when we get ready to have the conventions and the parties. They lay out their strategies and they lay out their platforms, and they, you know, they change every 4 years, and, you know, they tweak them, and, you know, they try to make sure that the platform reflects the present state of the party. So I'm really excited and optimistic that this year's platform is going to really reflect the direction that the Republican Party wants to take the country in, and for all accounts, it's to continue to grow and get back to our free market system and back to personal liberty and freedom, along with in accordance with the Constitution, the greatest document ever made, with the exception of the Bible.
Well, I'm glad you said it. We actually have a segment right here, sir, where we bring a gentleman who's a constitutional professional. And we break down each and every one of the amendments. We're at number 7. But when we come back, we'll be jumping on number 7, man. And I really think it's important, no matter if you're an American, that's where we all start off first. And you've got to learn the Constitution. I don't know how many people walk around and say, well, what's the amendment? I don't know. And they get mad when it's time to vote, and they have no clue what the hell they're voting on.
Right. I mean, the Constitution, I was speaking at a Tea Party rally in Illinois about 2 weeks ago, and I was one of the feature speakers, and, I attacked the word extreme. You know, liberals like to call conservatives extreme, and I said, you know what, I am extreme. When it comes to my freedom, I am extreme. I look, and I gave the reference that my people, unlike any other people in the United States history, was brought to this country in chains. They were brought here to be servants and to work against their will, and throughout our entire experience for 30 generations or so, 300 years, we watched other people come from all over the world to be free and work and grow families and fortunes in our free market system. And so I'm fortunate that I was born free. I am free to learn how to read. I am free to get an education. I'm free to own a gun. And there's no way, there's no liberal, there's no Democrat alive today that is going to do anything to take that freedom away that my ancestors never got a chance to experience.
I want to really, we're going to be bouncing a little all over the place, but you guys got a great lineup of speakers, over 34 speakers, but you've got people like Nikki Haley, Scott Walker, Rick Santorum, John Boehner, Ann Romney's going to take the forum. And bringing it on home is going to be Mr. Chris Christie, man, who, by the way, I got to admit, I know my liberal friends out there are going to be mad at me, but I like Chris Christie.
Chris Christie is the truth. He just tells it to you straight up.
And that's what I appreciate. It's so refreshing to see a political person, period. He cares what his ideologies are. But to be able to stand fast on what you say on Monday, and it's the same that you say on Friday, is refreshing.
Well, see, this is the difference with conservatism and liberalism. And I've studied all of these political ideologies extensively. And I'm proud to say I'm a conservative because it's real easy to understand. It's real easy to articulate what it means to be a conservative. And so I don't have a problem standing by what I said yesterday, today, and tomorrow because it's based on the freedom in the Constitution. And so I don't have to finesse that, whereas liberals, they hate to be called liberal because once people understand what liberals stand for and their shift in ideology based on the needs of the day, they have a hard time explaining it. Whereas conservatives don't have that problem.
Speaking of liberalism and conservatism, what's the deal with the tone of a lot of this, of the politics being played out? Now, here's my thing. I have no problem whatsoever if you're going to stand on a liberal agenda. And whether you like it or not, that's what you believe in. Or if you're conservative and believe in these sets of values, hey, because ultimately we have choices, right? We either go left, we go right, and then we see what happens. What I'm really disenchanted with is the really up-hype rhetoric that goes along with saying that someone's, you know, whether any party, I'm not going to call out any party, but, oh, they're not American, they're terrorists, and you know, all these other things that really deflect what we're supposed to be voting on. You know, if your platform is about lowering taxes and getting rid of some of these social mandates, then great, that's what it should be about. If you're about raising taxes and giving more money for the poor, and then right or wrong, let's stick with that. But when it comes to, well, you know, is he? You know, here's my thing, and I'm just going to ask your opinion. What's with the Obama being American stuff? I mean, come on. Are we serious? Do you think the American people, the people who run the country, who really run it, now we know who really runs it, right? Do you think they would allow this guy to have gotten anywhere close to where he is today if he didn't check out to be a damn American?
Well, let me first address what you first said about the tone. And that issue is possibly one of the most disingenuous arguments in American politics today. And if you look back, and if you look in, put it in perspective, our politics today is probably a lot more civil than any other time in the history of the United States. The way it used to be was people, when they disagreed, they say, you know what, homeboy, let's go out in the back. You get your pistol, I'll get mine, and then we're going to settle it. That's how they settled disputes. They used to call them duels. And they would go out. They will put. Have you ever seen any of the classic old caricatures, political advertisements that they used back in Abraham Lincoln days? I mean, they were vicious. People, what they did were vicious. So, I would say that and if you put it in perspective, today is a lot more civil. And so you know, in politics, it's a contact sport. People use colorful language, so you can't go out and try to act like, you know, you're so above the fray. But then you go out and do the same tactics of your enemy. You shouldn't get involved if you got really thin skin. So to address your other comment about Obama being American, you know, a lot of people feel that way for whatever reason. They feel that I think a lot of people believe that he was born in the United States, and whether they do or not, a lot of reasonable people have conceded that. What they mean is his outlook is, you know, whether you agree with him or not, is un-American as far as a lot of the things he believes and a lot of legislation that he follows. So I think that is what they mean, and I think people intentionally are making it a literal sense because they appeal to people's ignorance.
Right. Well, I certainly agree with the people's ignorance, but I will say even Aaron Burr didn't necessarily call Thomas Jefferson or any one of those people non-Americans, even though he would shoot you in a New York minute. But whether or not you would be American probably wouldn't be what they were arguing about.
Well, you know, if you were loyal to the crown, I mean, they called you all kinds of stuff, and they would, you know, drag you out of the house and ruin your reputation. So, you know, it's kind of, to me, it's all relative. And, you know, a big part of politics is sideshow. And it cuts both ways. People want to make a sideshow to try to distract people from the voting records and this and that. And that's part of the game. To me, it's frustrating as a substantive person. I was getting into it with this gentleman the other day. He's like, you know, I don't really like Romney. He's out of touch. I like Obama. He seems to be a nice guy. And I said, you know what, I could care less if Obama's a nice guy. I could care less if Romney's a nice guy. I don't want to hang out with either one of them. I don't want to drink with either one of them. Just like when I go to Burger King, I could care less if that person is a good person who's making my sandwich. All I want is a good sandwich that's clean and he hasn't been sticking his fingers in it. That's all I care about, the job that the person performs. So that's high school politics, to be so concerned with somebody being a nice guy, not the way we should run our government.
Hey, question about the Tea Party. I know you just said you spoke at an event or rally recently. Is the I wanted to ask somebody this, so maybe this is a great time. Is the Tea Party and the Republican Party the same, or is there a faction of it, or, you know, is there any difference when one person says Tea Party or Republican Party, are they speaking of the same group of people?
No, they are not speaking of the same group of people. The Tea Party is different from the Republican Party. You can say that there is some overlap there. Obviously, you know, I'm active in the Tea Party and I'm an active Republican. But you have some people that aren't. You have some people that have never been politically active, but when the Tea Party arose, they felt compelled to be a part of that because the Tea Party is strictly what we perceive as conservative values, as well as, you know, you with liberals and MoveOn.org and what have you. They're not a part of the Democratic Party structure, even though a lot of them are probably Democrats. So you have, we have a two-party system with two different, you know, ideologies of how to form the government. But inside of those two parties, you have a lot of different interests as far as, you know, the Democrats. They have the unions. They have the quote-unquote black vote. You know, they perceive that all of us think the same way. So, you know, for all intents and purposes, they have blacks, they have this, they have that, the environmentalists, and then, you know, you have the Republicans, where you have what many people may consider the value voters. The Tea Party perhaps aligns closer to the Republican Party, and so forth and so on. So the two are not the same, but there is overlap.
You know, the big thing that liberal media is chatting about right now, as I scanned over much of the internet and TV for the last couple of hours, is it appears a lot of the Tea Party representatives who've been vocal, i.e. Michelle Bachmann, Jim DeMint, Sarah Palin, Rand, and Rick Rubio, are not necessarily on the speaker board for this convention. Is that a slight of that, or is that just kind of the way the cookie crumbles?
You know, from what I understand, from all of the people that I've talked to, it is, I don't know, I won't say it's a slight, but I think it's a direction that, you know, perhaps the direction their take perhaps is a lot more rigid, you know, to the right. I happen to be with one of those people that agree with Herman Cain. I'm more of the to the right. I'm conservative slash libertarian. So that's what I believe. But you have to understand that both parties tend to be a lot more mainstream. So you have to kind of understand that dynamic, and they present different issues that the party probably just doesn't want to deal with going into the election, for better or for worse. So I think that they're trying to. The purpose of the party is to be the mainstream organ of American politics, and then, like I said earlier, you have these other groups within the party that try to yield and wield influence, but they're not necessarily representative of the party.
You know, let's get back to the convention. Let's talk about Romney's platform. As you know it, what is he particularly running on? Because, of course, the media will tell you that he has no platform and he's just out there willy-nilly. What do you hear him saying, and what do you think is his major focal point to winning this election?
He's running on his on the economy and on his private sector experience. So, you know, in the primary, you had a lot of different Republicans running. You had some running particularly on social issues, some running on defense, what have you. And you have to realize Romney is a Northeastern Republican, so he's not the you know, the Bible Belt Southerner type. He's not the, you know, perhaps Midwestern home values or whatever. He's more of a Northeastern guy, which means he will be considered a liberal Republican by most of us that live here in the flyover country. So you have to kind of take that into consideration. And with them, they focus more on the economic, on the business issue. So that's been his strength, and that's what he's running on. He's running on the power of the free market system and unleashing American ingenuity, unleashing the American entrepreneurial spirit. That's how he's been successful, and that's his bread and butter, and he's going to run with it.
In your opinion, why have you not spoken more on his record as governor of Massachusetts? I mean, he's done some good things there, but you don't hear him really, pontification on those topics. Is that planned or?
Well, you got to realize in politics, like with other things, it's about momentum. So, you know, I give the football analogy. If you know the team you're running on, you're playing against, has a weak front four on defense, you're going to pound the ball at them, and vice versa. If they got weak secondaries, you're going to attack them in the air. So he realizes that right now the economy's struggling, and you know a lot of people, unemployment's up, a lot of economic the economic tailwinds, if you would, are against the president. So you're going to play up your strength against his weaknesses. As simple as that. So it really doesn't behoove him to talk so much about his record overall in Massachusetts when the president is suffering right now. He's polling really low on his economic stewardship. So you got to pound him where he's weak. It's called strategy.
Andre, let me just say this formally, man. I like you infinitely better than any Republican pundit out there in on TV today. I don't always agree with a lot of what your politics and your ideologies are, but one of the things I love that you do is you cut to the chase and you don't pussyfoot around with what's going on, and that's so refreshing, because I think if we got more of this, then people would have a better chance to make some decisions that are intelligent decisions and not on, as you said before, a whole bunch of, you know, just front row seat drama.
Well, you got to realize you got people that get paid millions and millions of dollars in Washington, D.C. and state capitals across this country they poll people, they play with the words. They say, you know, what word can we say to get a person to move this way or think this way? And that's what they do. They get paid to make sure people remain stupid. And I just take the time to, I don't, first of all, I don't trust any of them. and I haven't got a degree from FAMU, and haven't worked in Congress, haven't worked in the, you know, in the political system at the highest levels, I understand how the game works. I understand semantics. I understand communication. And so you're not going to come at me and say, you know, you hate the rich and you hate the poor and this and that foolishness like that. I want to understand how does the policy affect people, what we do in our daily lives. So they hate me because I just take the time to actually think about what people saying. But most people really don't do that. And a lot of people are immersed in music, they're immersed in TV, and they're immersed in fantasy. And so it's a lot easier for them to just listen to a commercial and recite some foolishness that they don't even understand. And so these people that get paid millions of dollars to craft this stuff, they understand that dynamic. And the last thing they want people to do is actually take the time to listen to the words and make an intelligent decision. Unfortunately, I get called a sellout in my community because I actually take the time to think for myself.
Wow. Well, I imagine that, right? A rattler being called a sellout. Anyway, hey, we got a caller, and unfortunately I don't have my screener on today. So, error code 734, you are on live. Let's Talk Politics, talking with Andre Harper. Do you have a question or comment?
I do. I have a comment, and I was listening to your last caller, but I really don't have a comment towards him particularly. I have a comment towards the state of this politics that the Republicans are doing, which is called, I hate to say it, rape politics. I don't understand why it is that they're carrying this woman dog whistle. I mean, today you have an article out basically where Tom Smith over in Pennsylvania, he's a Senate candidate that basically compares a pregnancy from rape to having a baby out of wedlock. Really? And then we have Aiken, who basically says that, you know, it's a such thing as legitimate rape. Why are we playing this dog whistle politics when it comes to women and their choices with what they decide to do with fetus, that a man who has used power and control and a crime to impregnate the woman with this fetus? Why are we even talking about, why is this even an issue in the political scene today? This should not, I mean, it's almost like they're trying to use us to get attention, and I don't understand the point behind it.
Okay, Andre, you're still there. Did you want to take on that question for our caller?
Yeah, I will. First of all, there's a few things. One, you know, the standard, these guys are making statements, and the essence is of what they're saying is they don't believe that a baby should be killed under any circumstances. So they're speaking for themselves. Unfortunately, when Republicans talk, you know, one or two guys make these isolated statements, people tend to make it seem like, well, everybody else feels that way. As far as when a Democrat makes a statement like that, the thing is, well, that guy's dumb and he doesn't speak for everybody else. So, but at the end of the day, these people have the freedom to speak and say what they want, whether you agree with them or not. I happen to agree with the position on abortion. I don't believe in abortion, but at the same time, I think that these guys are, it's a losing effort to really try to go into this abortion stuff, and it's a sinking trap. I don't know why they keep doing it to try to win over voters that are probably going to vote for them anyway. But at the essence, it's freedom of speech. Just like the caller has the freedom to go out and say what she pleases, they have the freedom to do the same, no matter how dumb or trivial we may think it is. So that's my position.
Hey, I want to thank the caller. Unfortunately, we couldn't have a rebuttal, but I want to thank the caller for hanging out with us and having that question.
Yes, thank you.
Very, very valid point. And, you know, this is going to be something, I believe, that's going to be argued till the end of time, because they are very just opposed points of views. There's a woman who obviously has her own body and her own right. There's a more religious connotation of that. We know thou shalt not kill under any circumstances. Is there a human being? Yes, then should be terminated. Then there's, okay, well, if we do that in the middle, when is it okay? And we start having these little laws to say, well, if you tripped on a stick, then it's okay. If you got raped, then it's okay. And it's just,
it's just a losing proposition for any, particularly any Republican to run on that stuff. And, you know, a lot of Republicans say, you know what, I believe in life. And they'll say, well, what do you mean by that? What do you mean? And they try to pound them, hey, you heard what I said, I believe in life. Because it's just, it's stupid. And so when the guy, you know, in the case of Aiken, I wasn't in his brain. I wasn't his communications director, so I can't tell you. I didn't prep him for the interview. That he was just trying to be overly articulate in order to say he believed in not aborting a kid in any, under any circumstance. I'm one of those people that you know, I couldn't, if you asked me, well, what do I think about the situation, if that were a relative of mine, I wouldn't, I'd say, you know what, I'd have to be in that situation, and I would refuse to answer those types of questions, because you don't really know how you're going to act in certain situations. It's really hard to say stuff in a situation that intensive and that emotional, how you're really going to react. So it's a losing proposition to even go there. And the people that ask these questions understand that, and that's why they ask them.
Hey, Andre, we're going to wrap it up with you, man. First, I got one question. I got a couple things I want to ask you before I let you go.
Okay.
Paul Ryan, man, I almost want to say I like him better than Romney. Am I crazy for saying that?
No, absolutely not. You know, it was funny. When they first named Ryan as the vice president, the Democrats were like, thank you, Jesus, we won now. Oh, boy, this guy, we're going to kill him. But you got to realize, once America started to listen to this guy, and I love Sarah Palin, don't get me wrong. I think Sarah Palin is an awesome person. I've met her. I was, you know, I think really highly of her. But when it came to policy, her being in Alaska, she was really out of her league. It was just she got thrown into a situation that she wasn't prepared for. But this guy is ready to play hardball, and when Romney picked him, that signified to me that this guy is ready to play hardball, because he knows those issues back and forth. He knows the budget. He understands how to articulate that, and so he's got a plan, and people, you know, like it or not, plan, it's an idea, but it's something on paper. So it's been easy for the Democrats to say, well, this is bad about his plan, this is bad, and demagogue it, but at the same time they have not presented anything. And that's gonna play out. And so Romney did get a bounce with this guy, and I think as people get to meet him more and realize he's not a flashy guy, he's not Michael Jordan, he's not gonna dunk on you and stick his tongue out. This is a bread and butter guy that understands the issues. And people are going to be very receptive to that now that vacation's over, and people are going to start to pay attention.
Okay, real quick before we let you go, you and I both have studied these election things quite intensively over the decades and years. We know there are a couple of key states, especially to beat an incumbent president. It's very difficult. I don't care what party you're on. You have to steal, for lack of better words, of states. So I'm going to ask you a couple states. You tell me, can he win it? Ohio.
When you say he, you mean Romney or Obama?
Romney.
Okay. Ohio, yes, absolutely. Hamilton County, my own home, Cincinnati, southwestern Ohio, we put Bush over, and we're going to put Romney over this year.
Pennsylvania.
I live in Pennsylvania now. I think we can do it. I think there's a lot of discontent with Obama and the unions and a lot of the leftists that have run this state. In 2010, the Republicans took over the governorship and the legislature. I think we got the momentum on our side, and I think we're going to win Pennsylvania, close margin, slim margin.
North Carolina,
Romney all the way. Biden didn't even know where he was at. He was talking about in Virginia, we're going to win North Carolina. and they're not going to go. Obama got them in 2008. He's not getting them this year.
And last but not least, Florida. Who wins Florida?
Florida, that's a toss-up. That is a toss-up. I would lean to Romney, depending on how he does along that I-75 corridor, because they are excited right now down there. And I would say Florida of those is a toss-up, with Chris coming out in Obama's favor the other day. That can work way well for him. But Florida's suffering, man. And, you know, you got to – the president is running like he's the challenger, but you got to when the president's running for reelection, it's always a referendum on his performance. So I'd say that's a toss-up right now.
Hey, Andre, thank you so much, man.
One quick thing. My daughter wants to say something to your audience all across the country. Hold on.
Please do.
Hi.
Hi. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
What would you like to say?
Hi.
Okay, she just wanted to say hi. She likes to be on the radio shows.
Cool. Hey, back anytime, Mr. Harper. We love you, man.
Oh, you got it, man. Love you, too. Rattler Pride,
right.
Always.
Always, brother. That's my favorite Republican right there, Mr. Andre Harper. Hey, guys, sit back real quick. We're going to take a 30-second commercial break, and when we come back, we've got Nikki Trini Wiggins in the house. We're going to talk some shop. We'll be right back.
Has the value of your home decreased, making it impossible to sell your home? Are your monthly payments starting to pull you under? At Taylor One, we work with homeowners nationwide on short selling their home by negotiating directly with your bank to take less than what's owed for a meaningful resolution. With over 20 years in the business and a customer service priority, Taylor One has helped thousands, and now we want to help you. Call for a free consultation at 888-882-6463. Or visit our website at www.taylor1llc.com.
Hey, guys, we're back. This is Let's Talk Politics, where we talk straight talk. And, yes, we do have Republicans on the show. I told you guys we have them every now and then. Not always, but every now and then we'll have them on the show. And I know that drives our left all crazy. Probably Nikki is over there fuming right now. Anyway, hey, bring it to the fore. We're going to talk a little bit about local politics, just local incidents that are happening right here in the Hot Atlanta. The Land Grant Act is back at it again, well, being affected at least. More ground for you guys who don't know. It's in hot potatoes again. Here today to talk a little bit about what in the heck is going on is our own political pundit and managing director of F Squared Communications, Ms. Nikki Wiggins. What's going on, Nikki?
Hey, Clark. How are you? Thanks for having me tonight.
Good. We'd love to have you on the show. We missed you these couple of weeks.
I know. It's been busy. I've been on vacation and then business travel, so it's been a little crazy, but I missed you guys as well, and I'm happy to be back.
Hey, so, Nikki, we Rattlers Republicans, what's up with that?
I'm pleading the fifth. I have nothing to say.
See, I was going to try to start something, and you talk about you pleading the fifth. That's okay. Not this week. Okay.
All right. I really respected everything that he said, although I didn't agree with everything, especially his comments about Sarah Palin. However, everybody is entitled to their opinions and their political affiliations, and I will leave it at that.
We're going to leave it at that. Hey, Atlanta, what's going on with Morris Brown back in the throes of failure again? I heard there are only 50 students at Morris Brown. Am I hearing this right?
No, that's what I've heard as well, that there's 50 students at Morris Brown, you know, but it's a sad state of affairs, not only for Morris Brown, but for HBCUs and black colleges everywhere. If one can fail, we all can fail. And as a graduate, you know, of Florida A&M University, we've had our issues as well. And the difference is we're state-funded schools, you know, and we could have the same issues happening to us if the state of Florida decides that they no longer want to support us. So I think this is something that the entire HBCU community needs to pay attention to, because it could happen to any of our institutions. And I think it's our responsibility to make sure that it doesn't.
It was my understanding, and that's why I wanted to talk about this a little bit. And someone brought it up to me, and I said, well, I don't know, let's talk about it. The Land Grant Act of 1862, which was then passed again in 1890, which basically the federal government gave funds to states to start a lot of these schools, especially HBCU. At the time, I guess the law was if you were going to build a school for white folks, then you had to build an accompaniment school of the same kind of quality for at least allow for it to be built for African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
The question was, and maybe you can help me understand this, if basically these schools are granted, right, which means they have federal funding, federal backing, at least at the very beginning, how are so many of us failing and our white counterparts are not? What's different?
Well, part of the difference, Clark, is that unfortunately HBCU alumni do not give back or support their universities in terms of financial contributions at the same rate as those at predominantly white institutions. That's a major major problem at our universities. And as you know, my business partner, Keisa Foster, used to be the managing director of the Tom Joyner Foundation, and she was intimately involved in raising funds for HBCUs. So we have an intimate relationship with HBCUs as well, as we represent the National Black College Alumni Hall of Fame Association or Foundation as well. So the rate of giving is really, there's a disparity in the rate of giving for HBCUs than there are for PWIs. Also, just the level of support from the federal government is not at the same level. Now, and I don't want people to think that because the federal government gives money to HBCUs that that should be enough to sustain them, because that would be inaccurate. It's just like the federal government, the federal Department of Transportation gives money to each state for their roads and their bridges, but the states have to come up with money and the taxpayers have to come up with money as well to be able to maintain those roads. So it's a three-pronged approach that has to happen. And when one fails, another one, you know, another one can't, the other part cannot sustain. It's like a three-legged stool. When one falls, when one leg falls, the other two cannot sustain the stool.
But Nikki, I got to ask you this. African Americans are spending $1 billion on discretionary funds for food, which is basically retail. But mm-hmm. we can't find the dollars to support our colleges?
No, I don't think that we can't find it, Clark. It's not that we can't find it. It's that we don't find it, or we won't find it. We will spend money on so many other things, so many luxury items and trips and vacations, and not necessarily build the infrastructure in our communities that help us get the funding or the money in our bank accounts to buy the Gucci purses and the Mercedes Benz. And I'm guilty of it. I mean, I've supported Florida A&M University as much as possible. So that's the story that I tell myself, that I've supported them as much as possible over the years when I could have been doing a lot more than I did. But I was out doing everything else under the sun. And we have to really take inventory of what we want to, what kind of legacy we want to leave for our children. You know, I can imagine that the alumni of the older alumni of Morris Brown is looking back saying, wow, I can't believe the university where, or the college where I received my degree is about to close. When I was there at the height of you know, their education, there were 3,000 students on campus, and today there's 50. There's something really wrong with that. And those 3,000 students that, you know, those the many alumni that graduated from there couldn't support the school on their own. So there had to be some other avenues and streams of funding coming into that university. And now make no mistakes, the university in some situations got itself in this quagmire as well. And the AME church may have helped. So we have to look at everybody's responsibility and roles in where Morris Brown is today.
Over $30 billion in debt. They're filing Chapter 11 to curtail the foreclosure of many of their buildings. 131-year-old history. This was the first black college in Atlanta. I didn't know that. I had to look that up. I could have sworn it might have been Morehouse, but it obviously is Morris Brown. Wow, how do they get out of this
well,
problem?
You know, in 2002, they had a huge financial scandal over at Morris Brown with the president, and I believe it was the financial aid director. And there was a federal criminal case against them both that showed that the pair had misappropriated a large proportion of the aid and the federal aid that came into the school and diverted it to ineligible college costs, including personal staff, and not subsidizing the students. So the federal government, in turn, you know, stopped giving that money to Morris Brown. And they gave Morris Brown, I believe, $8 million a year. And that was a huge hit for them. That was probably the largest financial stream that they had coming in. So from that point on, I mean, you would struggle. I mean, imagine if, you know, your paycheck stopped coming in every day. What would your family do? And then it's similar to the economy now. You know, we were in such a dire situation during the Bush administration, and everybody now is expecting the current president to be able to, in 3.5 years, change that situation that had been brewing longer than the 8 years that President Bush was in office. So, you know, this is tragic. It's very tragic. I hate that Morris Brown is going through this situation. And again, make no mistake, Florida A&M University could be in the same situation.
You know, you bring a good point. So many presidents in the history of the United States, not just President Obama, have been really at the wrong place at the wrong time. Hoover was blamed for the Depression, even though Harding administration was totally corrupt and got a pass because, of course, he died. So can't blame a dead guy. So it's Hoover's fault. And we see this play itself out even now. Certainly no one can correct anything in 3.5 years. If you think that, then something's wrong with you, and obviously something's wrong with a lot of Americans because we believe that. Now, I don't know if Morris Brown can pull themselves out of this fire. Obviously, Chapter 11 offers some protection. It's going to allow the government to really come in and start mandating a lot of stuff. But the bottom line is, even if they don't owe anybody, let's say their debt is forgiven, how do you think that that college or university now turns around and says, you know what, we're back in the saddle. Let's get back to 3,000, 2,000 students in here. Is that a PR campaign that has to go on, or is that just non-attainable?
Oh, make no mistake. In my heart of hearts, I believe it's attainable, but in what time frame? And you can't really put a time frame on it. It's going to take a while. I mean, once the school's accreditation was taken, it became extremely difficult to attract and retain students. So they've been dealing with that for the last 10 years, and now you have the school has filed for Chapter 11 bankruptcy. That's going to add a whole nother layer of problems in attracting and retaining students. So Morris Brown certainly has their work cut out for them in the AME church.
As I understand it, $13.1 million in debt to the U.S. Bank National Association, the fifth largest bank subsidiary of U.S. Bank Corp. So there you go. You got crooks debt. And I said it, yes, crooks. You know, it is what it is. U.S. Bank Corp. is a joke. But anyway, listen, Nikki, thank you so much. You know what they need? They need
F-squared communication.
That's
I don't
they
know
need
if
to get out of this.
I don't know if Keith and I would touch that with a 10-foot pole at this point. But we would certainly be willing to. I mean, not that we couldn't do the job, but there is so much going on at Morris Brown that we wouldn't even know where to begin. And right now, Morris Brown doesn't necessarily need to be thinking about a PR campaign. They need to be thinking about raising some funds to keep the doors open over there.
Amen. Hey, thank you so much, Nikki. Come back next week. We're going to talk some shop because, you know, I'm losing my train of thought, but our national convention is coming up soon, so we got to get prepared for it.
Absolutely. I'll be here.
All right. Nikki, Freddie, Wiggins in the house. See you next time.
Bye-bye. Thank you, Clark.
Absolutely. Hey, guys, that's our show for today. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you learned a little bit more. And, yes, we had a Republican on the show tonight. Get a break. We do it all here. Hey, shout out to everybody in the chat room. BMF Willie Green, the guest, Rejoiceful, showing up late. That's okay. I understand. You got to take care of the kids. ROJS Radio Live and, of course, Vino Noir. Hey, guys, tune in. Don't go anywhere. I want you guys that are listening right now, if you love wine, if you're a connoisseur of the grape, if you want to be a connoisseur of the grape and learn new ideologies, new terms, and get a whiff of some serious vineyards, hey, tune in 30 minutes. Coming up at 8:30, the debut of Vino Noir right here on the Survival Radio Network, hosted by Jerry Garrison. Tune in with us, take a 30-minute break, get something to eat, and come right back right here, same bat channel. Hey, that's all we have for you today, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you so much. Come back next week when we certainly will be talking more politics. This is Let's Talk Politics. I am your host, Clark Garrison. Hey, we'll see you next time. Be good.
Well, back in the middle, around. stop it now.